Yo, yo, welcome to Discover the Founder, the podcast where we go into the brains of your favorite founders. Today I have with me the chief rainmaker of Midday Squares.
They want me to go get that cash. They want me to go bring it back. They want me to break it off to them, but I ain't gonna have none of that. I'm running the race and I'm faster than them. Yeah, yeah. All of the trash, forget them.
This guy is a legend in Toronto, legend in Montreal, legend in Canada. Been there, done that, still doing it. Mr. Jake Carles.
What? How you doing, brother? Oh, that's those intros. Like, first of all, whenever I hear chief rainmaker, I always get fired up because people are like, isn't there a rainmaker in banking or in like legal world? I'm like, no, I make chocolate rain and I make it rain, baby. No, I'm kidding. It's all friendships and relationships. But thanks for having me and fired up to be here and been there, done that and still doing it. I like that.
Man, like, honestly, like, we've heard so much about you from the media, all of that, but I want to hear it from the mouth of the horse. How did it all begin? I know you were in the fitness industry before you, that was your first startup, but what was the transition like from fitness to, like, chocolates?
Well, I always like to say, like, I wasn't a great academic. I was not good in school. And my whole life started there when I felt really insecure that I wasn't fitting into like society. I was like this guy that was like, I gotta make people laugh. I gotta get attention. I gotta be the spotlight because academically I was moving backwards and everyone was moving forward. And I knew that something had to give. I couldn't follow the typical path of life. And when I was in college, I ended up trying to, you know, be the academic. I stopped being the class clown. I stopped being the academic. And I want to prove people that I am smart because society made me feel that if you do well in school, you're smart. So I started to be an actuary, failed miserably. And when I was applying for investment banking jobs and or actuarial jobs, I got rejected from every single bank, every single insurance company. So I was in this place where I was like, shit, I'm a loser. I'm a fucking loser, according to society. And that's when I watched Shark Tank. I'll never forget. I saw this guy pitch his dream literally to 50, he must have been 56 years old, two kids, three kids. I don't remember he had, but he had two mortgages on his house. When I watched this guy, I'm sulking like a baby because I don't have a job, but I'm in a comfortable zone. I have food on my table, thank God. I'm living in my family's house. And this guy puts it all on the line for something that he believes so much in. His passion, his energy, his momentum. And I looked at this guy and I was like, I need whatever this guy is on. And that was entrepreneurship. So I said, screw it. I'm done the school game. I'm done with the actuary. I'm done the investment banking route. And kudos to those people that do that. But I looked at that and I was like, what am I going to do? And I used to be like really jacked at the time. I looked like I was on like steroids and shit, but I was not on steroids. I was just taking natural supplements and stuff. And it was my passion. My fitness was something I loved doing. So I started to train people without a certification, believe it or not, but that's what you do. You got to do what you got to do. And I had no job, so I had to make money, right? So I started training people, but what I would do is take my shirt off. I would literally film on Snapchat my trainings with people having so much fun, relay races. It was outdoors in Montreal. Montreal's freezing, so in the summertime, you want to be outside. And I trained for people for free, bro, no charge. 5, 10 people, 20, 30, 40, 50. Then I started charging $5 a head, $10 a head. Next thing you know, I was making $75,000 cash. And I was like, fuck, I have something going, something's working. And what was really working wasn't the training style. It was my charismatic energy mixed with the storytelling on Snapchat, people seeing and wanting to be part of. So I did that for 2.5 years, did really well, made some money, closed that business. The reason why I closed it was I no longer had the passion that I had that energized me in fitness. So I said, what's next? And I wanted to throw parties now, so opposite. I wanted to throw parties on college campuses across Canada. And what I did was I threw parties and used Snapchat and Instagram to bring people together via storytelling, because that's what I was good at. And I tried to sell clothing pieces to the students to make money, because I had to make money somehow. Anyways, I went bankrupt in that business. I lost $87,000. I built a crazy cool brand though. Like, it was a hot brand. I had celebrities wearing it, NFL guys. It was crazy. The students loved it. I was throwing, yeah, I will. So I was throwing crazy parties, bro, hundreds. It was insane. But I didn't know how to operate a business. So I ended up going bankrupt. I had no choice. And my ex-girlfriend broke up with me at the time. And then my sister and my brother-in-law approached me with this chocolate bar. They're like, we got this functional healthy chocolate bar, basically a better for you chocolate bar that has protein fibers, tastes good. And we need you, Jake, to be the third co-founder and build the brand. You're epic at that. We're epic at operations. Let's go together and let's launch this. And I looked at them, I said, no. I said, the food space is boring as nails. The grocery store is unfortunately not an exciting place in, you know, at the time. And I said, if we just go look at the products on the shelf, there's no like connection. You know, you go to fashion, you go to Nike, you get a pair of Nikes, you feel good. There's something to the brand. You go to Sephora though, you know, I watch customers in there, they freak for the products, they love them. There's a story, there's emotionality, but in food and beverage, it was more based on price and commodity. So I said to my partners, if we're gonna do this and I'm gonna join, I'm gonna make sure that we blow this brand up by becoming more like a, like taking from the music industry, from the fashion, from the cosmetic, and bringing it to the food, where it makes it that you care about our brand, not just because of the product, but because you're emotionally connected. So that was my story of transitioning, and now I'm still doing Midday Squares, 5.5 years in. Me, my sister, my brother-in-law, and now we're a team of 55, I think, amazing folks, and we're trying to take over the chocolate world, and it's really hard.
If you say it's hard, bro, I don't know.
It's almost impossible. Like 99% failure rate in food and beverage entrepreneurship. And I get it. The infrastructure is really hard to build. Like, you know what? Hershey's, Mars, Mondelez, these companies that are $50+ billion each, have built over 100 years, is insane. So to redo that, it's like odds are really stacked against you. But me and my partners are out of our minds. We're missing a couple of screws, so we'll keep going.
That's amazing, man. Yeah, we talk about passion, right? Like I started my first business 2015, sold it last year, was built on passion. But at the end of it, I lost the passion for the business. I couldn't stand to see another Nike box, right? How do you draw the line between like losing the passion and still keeping that passion? For you, I think it's a little bit different because you're out there, you're in the world, like yeah. Doing TikToks and stuff, not very operational. I guess it's easy, yeah. But then you told me offline about like all the traveling stuff, all of that stuff, right? How do you still keep the passion alive?
Well, I'll be real with people. So traveling for work and being out there and having fun is only fun to a certain extent. You don't get to go see the city. You're not going out and, you know, taking walks and having fun. And you're working because if it's your business, you know every minute spent in these places, you gotta take advantage of. You know, especially we're still an emerging brand. We're still a startup. Yes, you know, we sold 30 million chocolate bars and we keep growing, but it's still at the beginning, somewhat phases. So I tell people, yes, I get to have fun going TV, radio, podcasts, newspapers, investors, retailers, everything that sounds really wild and fun, TikTok. But the truth is I'm giving energy 24/7 and I'm having a hard time recharging. Now, when you say passion, it's like, I think passion is super important in a business, but I think what's more important is to know exactly what your why is. If you don't know your why, or if you're basing it just on motivation and passion, it's gonna run out. Even if you're doing ops, even if you're doing what I'm doing as like, you know, being the face of a brand and all that stuff, because at the end of the day, passion has its limit to change, this transition, but whys are usually your real core values or what really is internally driving everything in your life. So for me, whenever I'm feeling burnt out, which I've burnt out twice majorly, I went through depression on this journey. I remember when I first had my second burnout last year, it was a 37-day depression. And what I mean by depression is I couldn't do anything. I sat at home, I couldn't talk to people. I had to take a leave of absence from the business because I didn't know who I was. How did I get back? 37 days straight of therapy to understand where my why went. Why did I go so right or so left when I wasn't going on my why? So what I did was I rediscovered that over time. It took months. But when you know your why, you can keep going forever. You can go when you're tired. You can go when you're energetic. It doesn't make a difference because your why is like the drug of life. You could deal with pain at a level that is unheard of. Athletes' whys are what push them. It's not the talent. The talent they've got to a certain level, they're all talented, but it's their mindset and their why that's gonna push them even better and better. And same thing with entrepreneurship. So that's what's driving me now is my why. My why, I believe, is to go out in the world every single day, spread good vibes and positivity, make people feel something really deeply inside of them. So like when I'm there, I want you to feel something. And then the third and most important thing in my why is to show everybody that you can win by just being unapologetically yourself. And the moment you are yourself, you are your best version. And if Midday Squares can build the next biggest chocolate snack company or a very large chocolate snack company, we will have proved to everybody that we did it our way. We didn't do it the standard way. And that's my why. So whenever the moments are eating dog shit and poo, I call it, it's like, I think back to that. I stepped aside, I look at the big idea, and I come back.
You are the king of building in public. right? I think that the term building in public was crowned after you started. I've never heard that before, personally for me. But how can an entrepreneur, like a day one startup, start building in public? You have all of these followers. I know someone who starts from zero, it might take them like 5 years, 10 years to build that following. But like, what are your tips from someone who's built successfully in public? A day one startup founder could start building in public.
I think the idea of building in public is, in other words, share your story proudly. And when you share it in an authentic format, you're creating a sense of potential relatability with people. It could be one person, it could be a million. It doesn't make a difference. Like for me, when I really started winning with the Building Out Loud, it was when I was really being myself. So people felt, he's not bullshitting. He's not artificial. He's this guy. This is who he is. And I either like him or I hate him. But the people that like me, could be 50-50. People that like me, they're diehard fans. They're my people. They're my community. And if you're gonna start a business, don't please everybody. So when you build out loud, if you wanna do it, all you gotta do is just be yourself and share that. And tips to do that is understand your why, which we talked about before, and just stay aligned on your why. Bring it always back to it. So for me, it's like, when I talk about a retailer, let's even work with a retailer, a mass retailer. Why does it relate to my why? Well, this retailer is giving us a chance. They believe in us. So then we're going to give our full throttle to them. I'll go in and take content. I'll show their retailer, because that is the ability that when we have that, we actually build a sense of community. And then that retailer is now part of our community. So I think the whole idea is, if you're going to build out loud, take the step, share your story. Don't be scared to share it. The only reason why you might be scared is because you live it 24/7. I live my story 24/7. So you might find it boring, but I don't live yours, so I want to see yours. Or the person next to you doesn't live yours. So what do you have to lose? You have to lose that someone makes fun of you, that someone laughs at you, someone judges you. Who gives a shit?
True, man. Also, like, we talked about, like, getting into big retailers and stuff, right? And I know it's, like, so hard to do to get into, like, a Costco or a Metro. Like, I'm getting, like, super technical over here. But, like, how did you guys do it first? And how do you continue opening new doors in Canada, in US, maybe out in the rest of the world?
So we're in 8,000 stores across North America, and we could be in about 60,000 at scale. So we have a long way to go, but we're in great retail partners like Sobeys, Metro, Walmart Canada, Target, Whole Foods, Sprouts, some amazing accounts. And the way we started was different. We weren't in these accounts when we started. We were in little coffee shops. When we started, we went to our local neighborhood and we said, hey, can you sell our product? And what we did was we focused. It was like the Facebook strategy. Go very, very hyper local. Let that build, get some excitement, then go to the next city. So what I would do is I would look at influencers that we liked watching, and we wanted their community to buy our stuff. And what I would do is I would watch where they shopped. What juice bar did they go to? What coffee shop? What gym? What local grocery store? I'd watch it. And then I would put the bar, our chocolate bars, in those accounts. So they kept on seeing it. Then they would naturally pick it up, and they would post about it, and it was part of their lifestyle. So they thought it was everywhere, and then every consumer thought it was everywhere, but it wasn't. It was in these local hyper spots, and we focused on turning the volume to be so high in those spots that the data coming back, when a large retailer saw this, like, wow, this brand is on fire. So we want them. So it became a pull strategy rather than a push. So the big retailers would come see this noise, all this social media, all this hype building out loud, and the local stores killing it. So they'd be like, we want this brand. So they'll reach out to us, but the negotiating power then comes into our hands, not into, hey, I'm reaching out to Metro because I want to sell them. Then it's in their hands, right? So now, like, even we still have a bit of difficulty sometimes with some retailers, but at the end of the day, we focus on our partners. We're not focused on going into every store right yet. We've rejected many stores. We like to go deep, sell a lot, velocity's high, which is just units per store per week that you sell, get it really high above average, and then use the fact-based selling and the building allowed to make your consumers be the ones that advocate for you. Because when you have those advocate for you, that's their customers as well. And usually businesses listen to their customers.
Man, it's crazy. I've seen some of your Instagram stories where you go into the store, go into the fridges, and you even rearrange your competitors' products. That's nuts. Like, what's the thought process and what's the mindset?
So I just did it this morning, actually, at Metro Ontario. I usually do it whenever I go to grocery stores. Here's why. We're in a refrigerated snacking set. In Canada, it is a set that has not been fully developed. So Midday Squares, ourselves, we're actually building that set. It's very hard to build a new category. In the US, there's a massive category that does almost $1 billion. I'd say a couple hundred million. But
when I see the competitor item all over the place and looks nasty and I'm already fixing mine, this isn't a zero-sum game. They're not trading our bar for their bar, or if even if they are, at the end of the day, it hurts the whole set when it looks bad. When everyone's messed up and all this stuff and I'm just one that looks perfect, I don't think that's great. I think that if I could help them and it makes it look nice for everybody, it makes the customer's experience better, I'm helping the customer. I'm helping the retailer, that's our partner. So I'm happy to do it. And when I did it, this thing went viral. I put it on LinkedIn, it went so viral because people are like, oh my God, you're helping your competitor. I'm like, this isn't a zero sum game. I have an abundance mindset. We can all win. There's a big enough pie for everybody to win. And once you have that mindset, people, A, start to like you better. You start to create an aura and energy around your brand. And then also it's like, you just feel good because if someone were to do it for you, you'd be thrilled. So I try to put myself in other people's shoes. And if you were talking about day one, I would have done that day one. Now I'm doing that because I've come a long way. Again, I do a lot of therapy. I do a lot of personal work. So these are the type of things that come from that.
Man, also what intrigues me the most is the Hershey story. I know we've said it a million times, but I want to hear it again. If someone was to sue me, I would not respond with a diss track, but you did it. Tell me how it happened from scratch. Like, when did they reach out and why, if you can?
Yeah, so I'll do as much as I can. So first of all, I'm a fan of Hershey's, and I always say this because they built a very, very incredible business. Do I eat their products? No, I don't need those products anymore in my life. But so, in 2021, I think it was, Hershey's approached us for M&A talk, and we had a great conversations, and we were discussing potentially selling the company and all this stuff, and we've gone to very deep, deep talks, and we didn't want to sell the company, so we told them no. And we really believed that we could build a lot more, and we were having fun, so why would we not continue when we're having fun? It's not all about money, right? And everything was fine, Gucci, everything was chill, we were friends, everything, we told them no. They loved our peanut butter flavor, they were obsessed with our peanut butter flavor, the orange package. And after we said no, 2 months, I think it was 2 months later, we received a cease and desist letter from Hershey Corp about using the color orange. We couldn't use it anymore. So I was like, 2 months ago, you were totally cool with this. Didn't get yes or your way, and then this is how you come at us. So I said to my partners, we have two options. We either go to court and fight it, because it's not the same color orange, or we, which would cost a lot of money, and as a startup, no one, you don't want to waste time on legal. Yeah. It's the worst way of going bankrupt. That's the worst way. The second thing is just change the package and move on. And we went home that night. I'll never forget. We were crushed because this was like, we were hype. Our business was hype. We were making momentum. We were fired up. Now this is just a pivotal moment against a giant in the space that we respect. And we decided a third option. Third option was, why don't we just show our consumers why we're gonna have to slightly change the package and be bold as sin, share the irony of good David versus Goliath, big chocolate versus small chocolate. Big chocolate didn't get their way, so they came at us in a fun way, right? I don't know cancel culture, I don't believe in that stuff. I believe in just sharing transparency, and that's what it was. We shared the story and then it blew up, and then we went one step further. We spent $70,000. $70,000, my crazy sister, and learning how to sing, do music. Dude, we went to go to recording studios for 7 months. It was horrible. To do a diss track to show Hershey's that we don't want to be you, so stop trying to think we want to. We could do things like this, creatively, fun, wild, bold, energetic. And it was a diss track, and it was just like to show who we are. And we released it. I'll never forget. I was like, don't do that. You don't poke a bear more. It's not worth it. And our intention was not to get them to hate at Hershey's. It was just like, we're having fun. And there was no response. And it was just, the customers loved it. We got so much press, it went wild. It was all over the US. And it was the first time I think that they ever received a letter, a response to their legal letter with that kind of answer. And so we had fun. I think that the moral of the story is storytelling is a very powerful tool. And you don't always have to do the traditional way of doing things. Think about what your strength was. The strength of the storytelling and transparency is a big one of ours as well. And yeah, kudos to Hershey's. I respect them. I still respect them. But we had a fucking fun time. It was nerve-wracking, but it was fun.
That's amazing, man. My next question is, where do you think you've made the most impact in your community and in the industry? I know among entrepreneurs is one thing, but apart from that, is there any other little niches that you've made like the most impact?
Well, we definitely work, we're ethical chocolate. So like we make it on the farming side, like that, like we invest in that type of cocoa is a whole other game. You know, there's cocoa that's not ethical. So like for us, that was a big priority for us to invest in that. That's number one. Number two, I think showing, you know, the entrepreneur community is great, and we're going to keep that aside, but I go to universities. out of my spare time for free to go and inspire the next gen to not make the mistakes that I made, in the sense of you don't have to follow the herd. There's many paths. I want to show them the other paths that are available, and they're risky, but not as risky as they think. It's risky to actually be mediocre in life. That's the most risky thing. To try to be not mediocre, just be yourself, hence the fact that that's what unapologetically or authentically means. You give yourself your best chance of winning. So my goal is to inspire that whole next gen to be more comfortable with who they are. And don't necessarily fall to societal pressures. And I could be a living example. I'm 30, I look like them, I'm young, I'm hip. I took a huge risk. It's working, and it's working because I truly think that authenticity and transparency is at the forefront of the future of everything. So if we just live our lives being somebody else, you're gonna be internally miserable. So if I could have any effect on their happiness or their purpose, that's winning for me. And I don't know, also we also, as a brand, like, you know, we're bringing better for you chocolate. So clean ingredient products for your digestive system, and not just junk food that's palm oil sugar. We're giving you proper food. So I think that at a scale is gonna make a huge impact over time.
If I give you $50 million right now to rebuild your brand or marketing, what would you do?
50 mil.
I ain't got nothing close to that, but hypothetical.
Give me the 50. I think we would invest in two things. So more into our team. So people on the media side, we would hire a huge impact of media. We really believe the future is storytelling via marketing. The second thing is R&D. I think that we can come up with really, really crazy innovation under the food world, whether that's ingredient innovation or food innovation. And we just need time, effort, money, and people. We're just lacking a ton of resources. So that's what I would use it for. I wouldn't use it for performance marketing. I would use it to build our organic marketing, meaning like our organic storytelling, and really build our reality TV show that we really want about entrepreneurship. So that's what we would do.
That's amazing. Do you think paid performance is dead?
I don't think it's dead. So we use influencers that do a phenomenal job, and they're great partners of ours. We also still use Facebook ads, and we're crushing it with a certain community there. So I think it's not dead. I think you just gotta get a little bit more creative. I think you need to get a little bit more, I think you need to put a little more effort. That's all it is. I think the world, there's moments where things change, and there's two things, either fails or you have to become smarter or creative. I think that's what happened. I think a lot of people that didn't take that smarter, creative, or complaining just went the other way. So for us, we still spend money on it and we still invest, and it works. But I think there's other routes too now. I think there's more options.
Well, before we end things off, man, what's the advice? If you had one single advice for an entrepreneur, a day one entrepreneur, what would that be coming from Jake Collins?
Block out the noise. There's a lot of bullshit noise out there. There's a lot of people gonna tell you you can't do this, that it's impossible. Friends, family, people that love you, that care about you. And it hurts. You feel you're like, well, don't believe. So if you have unlimited self-belief, just like there's some leaders out there like Steve Jobs had, like Elon Musk, like Phil Knight, they have unlimited self-belief. There's a reason why they got to the top. That is a power tool. If you use it, will give you your best chance of winning. If you get caught in the noise, it's distracting, it's dangerous, it will discourage you, it will hurt you. So stay focused, put your horse blinders on, and surround yourself with people that push you up, not down.
Thank you for coming down, man. All the best for everything. I hope to see Midday Squares everywhere. It's already everywhere.
We're gonna build. Let's go.